Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. Stone, we got a full house.
We most certainly do. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Tony Prince, IPA America, Ellen Dracos Lemming. We're going to get a chance to talk with Leroy Tanker. And we're going to visit right now, though, with Christopher Cooney and Jack Kolk. Jack is with ACR2 Solutions, and Christopher is with Infinite Options. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Let's start with you, Jack. Give us a little bit of an overview, if you would, about ACR2 Solutions. What are you out there trying to do for folks, and who exactly is it that you're trying to help?
Yeah, hi. ACR2 is an Atlanta-based company. We've, for the last 7 years, been working in high-tech information security and compliance, and mostly focused at this point in healthcare, the bulk of our business, even though we do work with banks, work with small clinics all the way up to large hospital systems on a national basis.
Now, I don't know if our listeners know this, but Atlanta is a good spot for healthcare IT, isn't that right?
It is. Christopher can probably speak more to where we stand in the national rankings, actually.
Absolutely. Atlanta is actually touted now as the healthcare IT capital of the country. With the number of companies here, we have well over 260-plus companies that are focused in healthcare IT. We have organizations like the CDC, Red Cross, American Heart Association, CARE, who all have offices, corporate entities based here in Atlanta, and we are a huge research and biotech industry based here as well.
So banking makes perfect sense to me when you start talking about compliance and security, but why healthcare? Is it this HIPAA legislation? Is that a big piece of the reason?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, recently, and again, a lot of people are familiar with some of the, you know, Obamacare components of the healthcare changes, but there's actually a whole other level of privacy and security that has to do with the regulations to protect EPHI, electronic protected health information, or personally identifiable information. And that's a big deal. People don't realize necessarily when they think about identity theft. A lot of times they think credit cards getting swiped and denying charges, but really the highest quality, the most valuable personal information that can be stolen is a health record. And as part of this new high-tech act and the requirements for people to, in fact, secure this information, it's mandatory for all hospitals, clinics, and now business associates. Big opportunity, and you know, one of the things we're here to talk about today is the requirements for the business associates that support the healthcare industry, that they have to, in fact, be compliant with the same regulations.
And I just wanted to piggyback on what Jack said in terms of the value of the data within healthcare now, healthcare records. There was a study that was recently done that said that traditional personal information, social security number, address, et cetera, goes for about $1 per individual on the black market. Versus health information is valued at up to $50 per individual on the black market. So there's a tremendous value now and emphasis and focus by, quite honestly, the criminal element to secure electronic patient health information.
Now, what is the bad guy doing with my health record? Like, why is it worth $50 to?
Medicare, Medicaid fraud. They can take that information, file false claims over and over again. They can use that data again to create identification, medical identification cards that they can sell on the black market as well, too. But more importantly, the Medicare, Medicaid fraud that exists there is significant.
So then, like, it's unbeknownst to me, they have my record. Somebody out there is getting care using my identification. And then so when it's time for me to use it, then they'll be like, you know, you're back.
You
know.
You already had these teeth pulled. Right, right.
I mean, there's extreme examples of that, but there's even less obvious ones. I mean, people buying health records and then, as Christopher says, applying for a reimbursement for procedures that weren't performed, for medical devices that weren't really delivered, and on and on. So that ability to create a record, submit for reimbursement into the insurance companies or the federal agencies is a huge business. And in fact, I mean, by some counts, 60 Minutes did a segment about a year ago where they were talking where it could be 20% of the total cost of the federal health care budget could be fraudulent activities,
wow,
which is why this push towards getting everybody to use electronic health record devices and do this electronically so we have structured data that is easier to pinpoint the potential fraud versus a lot of paper records being submitted.
You know, interesting enough, along with the fraudulent acts that are taking place, you've got, again, the criminal element that are literally hacking into hospital and clinic systems and holding this data hostage. they're literally, and there are cases that have been cited where you've got organizations outside of the U.S. that have hacked into hospital systems, captured the data, and literally will not release it until a ransom is paid for that information.
Wow. And you got my attention early in the conversation when you mentioned some responsibility does lie with people who provide services to health care.
Right. It's like even a person removed, one or two people removed businesses that are outsourced.
That's
maybe,
scary,
right?
Right. To me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the biggest changes. And so when the HITECH Act was put into law in 2010, there were segments of that law that weren't fully developed, okay? In other words, they were interim, final, or draft. Well, four of those just went final as of March 26th of this year.
Oh, just a few months ago.
Absolutely. And a lot of people, of course, because in this litigious and overregulated society we live in, this is a big deal. So there are business associates are now required. The people that support the healthcare system are now required to, in fact, maintain the security and privacy at the same level that the covered entity was. And that's a change. And a lot of those organizations, first of all, don't even realize that they're business associates, but secondarily, do not have the policies, the procedures, the security controls in place to do that. So, and what's changed is this. A lot of people that used to be, even though the business associates may or may not have known they were a business associate, there's a new specific definition, which is someone that creates, receives, transmits, or maintains EPHI as a business associate. That's much clearer than it used to be. But now, even those that knew that they were a business associate, a lot of times just signed an agreement. Well, the new law says that the covered entity, so the hospital, the clinic, the healthcare provider, has got to obtain what's called reasonable assurance. So they can't just sign a contract and say, I'm good. They've got to get reasonable assurance that they're actually doing something. And that's, again, what we get involved in a lot of times.
So then, like, the medical business is on the hook for their vendor.
Yes.
Right? So then they have to put things in place that kind of make sure their vendor is actually compliant.
Yes.
That's correct.
And is there a penalty? Like, what happens if they're not?
There's significant fines and penalties associated with not being compliant. Not only those federal penalties, but also you find that lawyers are now finding this as an opportunity to
really
enter into class action
suits. That's hard to believe.
Exactly. So now we've got ambulance chasers around data today now.
Now, let's be clear. Radio hosts are exempt from all this legislation. Let's get that on the record. So, I mean, it seems like these are some pretty sweeping changes. Are hospitals on top of this thing or not so much?
Or their vendors. There's no way all these vendors are on top of that.
Yeah.
That's a lot of – it seems like they need a lot of infrastructure in order to be compliant.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, and that's part of the reason why we're here as well, too, is to be those evangelists, the educators that make hospitals, the covered entities, business associates aware of their responsibilities now. No longer can they put their heads in the sand and say, I don't know. It's called willful neglect. I mean, if you willfully know that these issues occur and you do nothing about it, there are serious penalties associated with that. And the business associates are not excluded from that. In addition to, obviously the penalties that occur around that, the public outcry and the public back negative feedback that can come from knowing that your organization, your hospital or your physician practice was fined or there was a breach or something or EPHI data was actually lost or stolen in their practice, you're a lot less likely to want to go back to that entity if you know they're not well protected.
So I wanted to learn more about exactly how it works. If an organization engages you, kind of walk us through that that relationship a little bit and some of the early steps.
Yeah, well, you know, Christopher is a good example. The way that we work, in a sense, our company, what we do primarily is we like to liken it to what a tax program does to tax law, federal and state tax law. Our program does to information security compliance law. So we've got an expert system that we've developed by doing these kinds of assessments. The requirement for the EHR program is that you do a risk assessment. That's the first step of HIPAA compliance for the security rule. So you do the risk assessment, and out of that comes a lot of remediation processes. Now, typically, again, we would work with companies like Christopher. Christopher has his organization, and they would go out and work more directly with the actual practice or hospital. We do some, just like a, you know, it's the analogy would be a lot of hospitals, practices, and now business associates want a consultant that's more like what an accountant would be, and the accountant would use the tax program, and we develop the tax program, and he would be the accountant working with the actual practices.
Exactly. So in another life, I served as a CIO for a large healthcare system here in Atlanta. And that particular healthcare system was literally the first healthcare system in the entire country to go through a HIPAA audit for various reasons, primarily because no one had been audited before and they needed to
somebody had start, to be first.
Someone had to be first. And at the time, it didn't seem like a blessing, but actually it was because we were the first. And so there was a lot of learning that the federal government gathered as a part of that exercise. They went with us, they experienced with us. But one of the things that came clear on that was that every organization, I don't care what size you are, how complex you are, you're going to have some gaps in your privacy and security policies, procedures, and infrastructure, period. There is not an organization out there that is immune to any of that. And 6 years ago, when this happened to us, you know, the law was still very much evolving. There weren't the penalties that they weren't applying the penalties as significantly as they are today. Now the federal government is actively going after providers, business associates, regardless of the size you are. You can be a one doctor practice, and you can be a multi-discipline hospital system.
Dental offices, clinics, all that.
Absolutely,
all that's under
all
this.
Those that wow. meet that are required to meet those mandates. The federal government is actively going after them or pursuing them for not meeting these requirements. In addition to that, part of the Obama program was this concept of receiving funding to purchase electronic health record systems. And this was the ARRA funding. One of the requirements within the ARRA funding is to meet what they call meaningful use. And so we're not going to just give you money to buy technology. We're going to make sure that you're using it in a meaningful way. And there are certain standards associated with that. One of those standards is to conduct a privacy and risk assessment, because now that you're using this electronic data, we want to make sure that you've got the policies, procedures, and infrastructure in place to actually protect that information.
And then part of your the way that you guys work together is you're determining, okay, this medical outfit has so many business associates, and then you can make sure that they're actually implementing this kind of compliance for the business associates? Is that part of your service?
Well we start primarily with the provider themselves initially.
So you're a doctor,
right?
Like, can we play out like an example of that one doctor, right?
Absolutely.
Because there's probably business associates. There's probably more than you would think.
Oh, absolutely. Right? I mean, just at that organization I was a part of, we had well over 600 different applications and probably 300 to 400 different vendors. Probably a third of those were true business associates. They somehow touched the EP, the electronic patient health information in some form or fashion. So,
and you're on the hook. This one doctor's office on the hook for their compliance,
well,
right?
They have some responsibilities there, as well as the business associates also are equally responsible as well too. And what we're finding, quite honestly, is that many of the breaches that occur now are occurring by the business associate. It's not necessarily the negligence of the physician's practice customers or their staff, but it's their business associate who may have done something improper or was negligent and lost the patient information, or that information was breached in some way.
So now let's play this out. You're the doctor, and then you have 100 plus business associates, right?
Right.
That are working with your practice. You have the responsibility to say, hey, look, you got to get your act together because I'm not going to be on the hook for you messing up, right?
Right.
So now how do you help them get the infrastructure?
Well, realize this has just devolved now. So the final rule is now official law again as of March 26th, and it's got to be, if you didn't have a compliant business associate agreement in place, you have to have a compliant one by September 23rd of this year, 2013.
Right, so they gave you, whatever, 6 to 8 months.
Well, everybody that was following this or should have been following it knew. I mean, business associate was defined previously, but what's happened again is that the civil and criminal penalties have gone up 15-20-fold, and on top of it, it used to be the covered entity, the hospital, the clinic, could they would think they were outsourcing the liability.
Right. Well,
those loopholes are changed. That's the point, is the liability now flows with the information, okay? And this is a chain of custody type of concept where you can't get rid of the data and think that the liability went with it.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to look at this stuff. So historically, we've dealt with clinics, hospitals, and the actual covered entities.
Right.
Now with the new requirement, we are assisting them and going out and, first of all, helping them to identify who's truly a business associate. Because like we said, there's a lot of entities that they deal with that aren't truly BAs. But now the BAs have subcontractors. Think of that, maybe they can outsource the liabilities. They're required also to make the subcontractors be compliant also.
And it's at the same level as the person
above
it, right?
It's got to be equal or greater. Equal
Absolutely.
Or greater. And that's how compliance is supposed to work. You're not allowed to do business. So the reason that this is important for business associates to understand is, in theory, every covered entity that they work with is going to come to them and say, I need you to give me reasonable assurance that you're actually doing something, not just sign this piece of paper.
Right, and then wink, wink, like I'm really they're not really doing it.
Right,
they
exactly.
need proof. And so they're being like kind of audited to make sure they're really doing it?
Well,
is there some sort of a...
Yeah, in the last couple of years, the audit. See, the reason, this was one of those areas that was not well, despite Christopher being one of the first audits of a national, okay, was not heavily regulated in the sense of it wasn't enforced. So people tend to pay attention. You know, the old expression, people respect what they expect you to inspect. Well, they're inspecting now.
Right.
Okay, they've announced that they'll do between 5 and 10. So it used to be nobody knew anybody that was audited.
Right.
Well, now they do 5% to 10% of everybody that submits for the stimulus.
Now you know somebody who...
You know somebody. And the fines went from minor fines, where it was easier just to be fined and pay the fine in the event that you actually got caught.
Right.
Now the fines are minimum $50,000 for civil penalties up to $1.5 million.
Wow.
Criminal penalties can be multiple millions. All right. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking real money. It's a lot cheaper. So now it's time to do the real work to protect the data. And again, this is about protecting the critical infrastructure of the United States. This is going on in a lot of other industries. It just happens that healthcare has just such high quality information that can be used in so many different ways. So what we're finding, there's an estimated 500,000 business associates in the United States that in theory the covered entities as of September 23rd cannot work with them and be in compliance themselves
unless they don't get
assurance that these guys are doing something. Now, again, HIPAA, the law is the same for everybody, but if you have term of art is if you have the technical, financial, and resources to implement it rapidly, you have to. So in the case of a hospital, with a compliance committee, with a security team, with them, they need to come into compliance rapidly, and they should have already been in compliance.
Right.
When you get into the small practices, they have to do the risk assessment. The risk assessment tells them what they need to do for remediation, but they just have to come up with a plan and do it as they can afford to do it, given that it's not their core item. But again, there's an issue here of how much data and who's your patients. For example, at UCLA Medical Center, okay, their patients are the stars of Hollywood. Then in Washington, you've got the politicians. Those types of compliance regulations are taken a little more seriously. Not that the laws are different, but the requirements are enforced based, again, on your technical and your resources.
Right.
And then keep in mind, as we mentioned earlier, you know, you've got the criminal element that's out there that's actively penetrating the gaps that exist. So they know that, you know, many of these organizations do not have the appropriate infrastructure in place to ensure that this data is protected. So they're actively going after these organizations because they know they have these weaknesses.
Right. So the stakes are high. the action is not discretionary. Is this a slam dunk to sell, or is it still what is it like to go to market? Do you guys go to market together and call on hospitals? Talk about the sales and marketing piece.
Sure. Well, you know, part of it's education, right? And and then you know, awareness, and then finally acceptance that you that this has to be done. And then my company as a management consulting firm generally goes into organizations helping them solve problems. And this generally is one of the ones that always rises to the top. And so I partner with ACR2 and their solution, which offers a very affordable, scalable solution that gets them down this path pretty quickly so that they can get to the point of remediation, which is really where they want to be. They want to get that risk assessment done so they clear that hurdle, which is a major hurdle for compliance, and then two, start working down the path of remediation to ensure that this data is ultimately protected. Because even if you pass potentially the requirements for meaningful use and an audit that occur, and you still have gaps in your infrastructure, you still leave yourself vulnerable for, you know, internal threats, external threats, and just negligence to occur that will still create risk for your organization. So, you know, you don't want to just do this for fun and giggles. You're now in a place as an organization where you're having to depend on electronic data to provide care for your patients, and you want to make sure that information is available at all times. And speaking from experience, when these systems are not available, lives literally are at risk. I mean, you have organizations that, you know, when they become fully paperless, cannot tell you what the last medication was that was given to a patient, or what they're allergic to, you know, what surgery they just had, because all of this stuff is now electronic. And if those those systems are breached or compromised in any way, a patient's lives can be at risk.
Right. It sounds like that, like conceptually, electronic records, there's a lot of pros, right? Because now you as a patient, it's following you around, it's more portable as long as it's secure, like, right? And I don't have to fill out the forms 50 times when I go to five different doctors. Now the government can aggregate treatments to see, like, you know, in an anonymous way that this treatment's better than this treatment. There's a ton of pros to it, but we got to do the basic blocking and tackling and lock down the information so the bad guys can't get it.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So it's raining. It's raining heavily. You guys have umbrellas. Are competitors starting to come out of the woodwork, or do you have a bit of a jump on them at this point?
Well, we have a solution that scales very, very large. We have the normal kind of hospital physician product, and then we have what we call the enterprise that allows you to manage lots of different locations. Then we have the mega prize, which a Blue Cross Blue Shield or a large healthcare system can use. So we like to think that even though there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of IT and compliance and shops that are able to do the single site, but they don't have a cloud-based scalable technology like we've developed over the last 7 years. So.
And again, speaking for someone who've had to go through that audit, you know, we immediately reached out to one of the big consulting firms at that particular time to assist us. And trust me, when we got the bill at the end of that whole process, you know, we had to give away a couple kids and sell the farm, you know, to get that level of consulting that a product like this can deliver and empower that organization too. So we try to teach organizations how to fish, and then they take it and they can manage that process themselves going forward. Unlike some of the traditional consulting firms, they're always looking kind of for the next opportunity internally in that organization, and they keep that information close to the vest because they want their customers to be dependent upon them. We have a very different perspective. As Jack mentioned, you know, it's like a TurboTax tool where we can show you how to use it, and then you can start leveraging it in the way you need to leverage it to do the remediation. If you need our assistance, we're still there to assist you, but we can also teach you how to fly, and you can go off and do it yourself.
Now, how did you find Jack? How'd you learn about his offering?
Well, I'm president of an organization called HIMSS, which stands for Healthcare Information Management Systems Society. It's a national organization for healthcare IT professionals. And Jack and I met through that organization a few years ago. And as a result of that, we built a relationship. I'd already had that experience, so I knew exactly.
So when you saw his offering, you're like, where was this?
What was this when I needed it? Absolutely. And then clearly we knew, and we've been talking about this for 3 years almost now, that this day was going to come.
Right.
And we knew we wanted to get in front of it. We saw it as a great opportunity, and we've wanted to be thought leaders and evangelists in this space. And so far it's kind of materialized as we've expected.
Yeah, as Christopher said, and again, just you said you were the president of HIMSS, the Georgia chapter.
Georgia chapter, exactly. Let me be clear.
Yeah, HIMSS is the largest healthcare organization in the United States. So. Uh-huh. And Christopher, again, we use a particular methodology that because he had actually been audited, he recognized what we did. See, mm-hmm. one of the problems of this area is, you know, you go in and you talk to a lot of doctors and healthcare professionals, and you say you got to do this, and they go, "What do I know about this? I'm a doctor." You know, right. They don't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. And again, everybody wants to check a box. Well, security and compliance are a continuous process. And again, you're going to see this go on at a national level in many of what's called the critical infrastructure, healthcare being one of it, where the continuous monitoring of risks, of vulnerabilities, looking for threats. It isn't something you can
it's
check a box.
It's not a set it and forget it. Right. You got to work on it every
right.
day.
Right. We talk about the cycle of compliance. And you're much better off, as Christopher says, if you go out and get a consulting firm and they come and they give you a risk assessment and said, good luck. Then a year later, they come back and say, good luck. It's kind of like going to the doctor. The analogy I use these days is you go to a doctor and get a physical, you know, and then a year later, you come back and do a physical. The doctor says, you're worse off than you were last year. Right. Well, I told you what to do. I didn't do any of it, but I'm back because I've got to have my annual
physical.
Right.
I'll just ignore what you're saying. But.
Right. So this is that kind of thing. But one of the requirements, like we said, and one of the ways that it scales, if you're a large entity that's dealing with a lot of healthcare information, you need to continually remediate these vulnerabilities, these threats. Again, the
because you could be getting a new vendor. Like next month, there's a new vendor.
Exactly. Or acquire a new facility.
Right. And then all of a sudden, now you're vulnerable again.
Right. You got it. And that's the requirement. You've got to do it at least annually. And if there's a major change, major hire of new personnel have to be trained on security and privacy before they're allowed to use the equipment that gives them access to that information. There's a lot of requirements on an ongoing basis. And again, then there's even on an IT level, there's the requirement that the integrity of the data is maintained. I mean, who needs, you know, how many times have we heard that story about the person going in for an operation and they got their kidney removed and they go, I came in for a replacement. So the integrity's got to be maintained. And these types of processes that we put it through don't necessarily fix it, but they identify it and allow you to put a roadmap that allows you to address it. So again, you're at least aware of what you've got to do. It's called a gap report the way we do it, but that gives you that ability to really look at it. You know, because a lot of people like to think we're using best practices, we must be compliant. And the analogy, again, would be something like, they take money out of my paycheck every month. I must have done my taxes completely. You know, well, that's not how it works. You go through the checklist and you make sure that everything that's required. And once you've filled in all the forms, you can file your taxes. Well, we're the same way. That analogy, again, continues to work with kind of a tax program.
So,
and I was just going to also comment. I think the misperception, I think, a lot of times is that it's all technology. You know, if we put all the right technology in place, that's going to protect us. But what we find, quite honestly, is most of the remediation work is on the process side. Having policies and procedures and processes that help to mitigate risk, training and education that help mitigate the risk. And so we are able to bring those things to bear and point those out for organizations.
So where can our listeners go and learn more? Let's start with you, Christopher. Coordinates, contact information, website?
Sure. Real simple for me. The best way to reach me is 404-276-0738. And you can reach me by email, CKUNNEY@comcast.net.
And Jack?
Okay. And same for me. It would be 770-904-0997, jack.k@acr2solutions.com or acr2solutions.com for our website. And obviously, we have all the normal sales.
And you have a lot of good information, right?
We do. We have a history, again, across multiple regulations. Again, HIPAA is the focus today, but the payment card industry. And
there's compliance in a lot of industries, not just healthcare.
Well, it's been an absolute delight having you both in the studio this morning. And we got to have them back, Lee, because there's just an awful lot to talk about. There's plenty more to talk about. It might be fun to come in with a client sometime.
Yeah, I'd like to see a doctor or somebody in the medical profession come in with you guys to hear what it's like from their side, the complexity that they have to deal with.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you guys up for that sometime?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the funny thing about compliance, though, is it's one of those things where a lot of people are afraid to raise their hands.
Right.
It's kind of like,
exactly.
I have big security companies or groups that we've done security for, and we say, we'd like to use you as a white paper testimony. They go,
no.
I don't want to get out
there.
We may be able to find somebody who's left a position.
Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our next guest?
That'd sure. Great. Absolutely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, we have with us from the IPA family, Mr. Tony Prince. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, and I'm in compliance.
You know, I'm going to start saying that at the top of every broadcast. Welcome to Atlanta Business Radio Show, and we are in compliance. Well, we're glad to have you, Tony. Now, you're in the healthcare arena as well.
That's correct.
So tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing.
The work that I do is we provide health insurance for individuals, small business owners, self-employed, contractors, the people who are paying for it for themselves. We've been in business for over 40 years, and it's always been our focus. Unlike back in the good old days when you got a great job and had great benefits and you knew how your benefits were being covered, now it's pretty much everyone's looking to get more and more on their own as the Affordable Care Act comes into play in January of next year.
Now, what's your background?
My background is I was with a major corporation, General Motors, for over almost 27 years in a marketing capacity, and I also owned my own business, and I was a business consultant for 5 years. And what intrigued me the most about this particular aspect is I found a lot of business owners who, quite frankly, did not have a good handle on their business expenses when it came to healthcare and just brokered it out or did whatever they had to do to protect them and their families, and were concerned about the fact that they were looked at as individuals and didn't have any kind of association or support around them when it came to healthcare and also their benefits and claims.
Now, there's new laws, new rules coming down the pike. You and I have talked, Lee, as owners of a small business. I mean, I got to be honest, I'm a little bit concerned. What are some of the highlights of that law and how it's going to impact small and medium-sized business owners?
Well, one of the original or the opening statements in the Affordable Care Act is pretty simple. It says that most U.S. citizens will be required to have health insurance effective January of 2014. That's pretty succinct. But in saying that statement, there are criteria that will come into effect. And essentially, it is not government insurance, which a lot of people think. Mm-hmm. It's government mandates or government parameters for individual insurance companies to comply with to participate on a state-by-state basis.
There's that word again, compliance. Well, it's just like the theme.
I think so.
It's gonna, honey, did you do the dish? I'm compliant, dear. I think it's going to come up a lot. But it's the issue right now is very confusing to a lot of individuals. More and more in the last decade, professional people have left corporations, going into business for themselves successfully, and have looked at other opportunities to provide insurance, health insurance for themselves and their families, and quite frankly run into a roadblock of expensive products out there. As I indicated, we've been the IPA family as a division of IHC, which is our parent corporate, and we've been in business for over 40 years doing just that, providing individual plans. And we are not a broker. We handle all of our plans through the company, and we have everything from nationally not-for-profit endorsed association plans to short-term plans and also to term life insurance plans, which focus on health care so we can pull ahead for chronic and critical illness. Because the good news is more and more people are surviving more and more severe occurrences such as strokes, heart attacks, etc., where health care will cover your initial doctor bill and hospital bills, but you also have your sustaining of life as you know it, and you need some other support for that.
Now, now the way it's going to play out, I'm an individual, I'm a solopreneur, maybe I got laid off, I don't have insurance through my employer anymore, so now I'm on my own. How do I go about getting insurance like January 1? Aren't there like these exchanges? Aren't there Like, what should
you
I
go
do?
You go see Tony.
I'll just call Tony.
That's the whole point.
Should I get my phone number now, Lee, or no?
So what are my choices?
Let's give you a little bit of a time parameter, because okay. I think that's appropriate. First and foremost, October 1 is the beginning of open enrollment, which is where you'll see what kind of programs are available to everyone in the United States to
comply. October 1, like in a couple of months.
In a couple of months, exactly. And that's going to extend itself all the way through January, because it's obviously we're asking the whole country to do something that's right. pretty unique. The portion of that you expressly referred to in terms of the expense side of it is one of the major portions of the Affordable Care Act. Well, I'm not going to go into the whole process of that act, 2,000 some odd pages. I will tell you that it is designed to have an affordability level in the plan, and that's primarily done by way of the looking at the federal poverty level, which sounds a little depressing, but the federal poverty level is a percentage. Up to 400% of the federal poverty level, people will receive assistance toward their premiums for insurance. So if you think of it this way, everybody can buy the same box of cereal.
Right.
But depending on your income, that box will be subsidized for you to a lower price.
Now, there's at what age is the minimum? So 26 is the minimum age where you need this?
No, 18.
18.
18 will be the 26, and you bring up an important point that went into effect several years ago when the original, when the first parts of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act came into a being, which allowed families to keep their young adults, of which I haven't said, on your policy until age 26. And as you know, as you've seen the statistics lately, there are more and more, you know, children coming out of college that are still living at home, still sure. looking for that job, and have not found. So that's been a very helpful part of the Affordable Care Act, which so there have been some major benefits already of the Affordable Care Act. But primarily, if you look at the 18 to 64 range as your middle of your market, under that there would be dependents of a household. Over that will be a Medicare-type program, although I predict that you'll see those all kind of come together as one large Affordable Care Act. So regardless of income at the lower level or, you know, the age at the upper level, they'll all be under this one big umbrella.
But well, I'll tell you how we found out about the –
I know you're both excited, so just one at a time. Come on.
I'll tell you how we found out about the 26-year-old thing. Mm-hmm. We had a 26-year-old in our organization ask for a raise.
they come out of the woodworks very quickly. And on that note, there is actually a product that works very well for that is a short-term major health plan, which can go into effect for either 6 months or 12 months, which is a lower-cost plan, which gives an individual full health insurance products, but it's designed for someone looking for getting into something permanently.
Now, when I was in my 20s, I had a lot of friends that said, why should I pay for health insurance? You know, I'm never sick. Like, I never go to the doctor. And now you're going to be required to, right? Like, everybody's got to pay for something. Is that true or not true?
Yes. Yeah. As the law states, that everyone will be required. And to your exact point, there's going to be a lot of education processes going.
Right.
As a matter
so
of fact,
you're the
28-year-old
kid. You know, you don't have your parents to pay for this anymore.
You feel
you're out
bulletproof
on your own.
Already.
I got this figured out. I got a job. I'm not paying a lot of money. What's the penalty if I say, you know what? I'm going to roll the dice. I'll just pay the penalty.
Okay, two sides to that. The first of all, the invincibility side of it is showing to be not as true as it's been in the past because you've read stories about 18-year-olds having strokes, of young kids playing college football, having heart attacks. These things do happen. The reality is putting healthcare into perspective. And putting healthcare in perspective means healthcare is not really for that everyday doctor visit. You don't buy auto insurance for oil changes.
Right.
You buy oil, you know, buy car insurance for a matter.
Right.
Same thing with healthcare. And as Christopher and Jack referred to, you know, once those compliances come better in line, those will be more affordable as that process goes forward. In that same defense, yes, these are real dollars coming out of real people's pocket. We know what the economy looks like right
exactly.
now.
Exactly, and they're working at Starbucks.
Yes. Now, right. as I mentioned to you, the federal poverty level, which actually is about $11,000 and change for an individual, so the subsidy will go up to 400%, so that's approximately $44,000 for an individual income, right. and for a family of three, give or take, is about $98,000. So we're not just talking about low-end income.
Right.
So there will be some subsidies for those individuals. The point is, though, that there will be, if you do not have or you cannot afford, it's still at that level, to the levels that you want to satisfy your personal needs for your health care, there is a penalty at the end of the year, which is going to go through the Internal Revenue Service's processes. But basically, it's $95 for an adult or $47 and change for half the price for a dependent child, or 1% of the gross household income, whichever is greater. So that amount can be actually less than the monthly premiums. In line with that, there are other options that individuals can take. There are indemnity products that will supply dollars to offset both hospital bills and doctor bills, which we provide, of course. And these plans are underwritten, which means they're in a network system, which means your insurance will be repriced. So if you get that $50,000 bill, it'll be repriced based on contracts that we have through national organizations to bring those. So there are alternatives, and that's why I'm an advisor, not just an agent, and we advise individuals on a one-on-one basis. And as we unfold the rest of our program, knowing what the Affordable Care Act is bringing about, we're actually calling ourselves we're advising America. Because we have a plan that fits everyone in America. And some of that plan will be major medical health care, which is obviously a great compliance.
That's affordable.
But it's got to be affordable. Right. And you got to work your way into it. And while the government realizes that, that's why the penalties are not as stringent. Now, they do increase substantially in the next 2 years after that. And I'll say right now, because it is a rolling wave of plans and changes that are constantly, weekly, they're making adjustments to the Affordable Care Act.
So what kind of questions should I as an individual be asking an advisor or an agent to get the appropriate coverage? Because I'm not even educated at this point enough to know what kinds of questions to ask to make the discernment between a Tony Prince and, you know, somebody else.
Well, I'm the tall, good-looking guy. the biggest question you want to ask is, you want to look at your asset management, in your own personal asset management. How much money can you afford to spend out of your pocket, both on a maintenance basis for a premium, and also how much money can you afford to have come out of your pocket or out of your household should something happen, whether it's critical, whether it's a maintenance or a sickness situation, or should it be an accident or injury? One of the benefits of the plans that we offer is that we have accident plans that coincide with our health plans, which have very low deductibles in $100 and $200 range per incident per person, which help offset the high deductibles that people look at. You know, you know about deductibles, and you see a $10,000 deductible, and you're saying to yourself, I cannot write a check for $10,000 right. Or use my credit card for $10,000. Well, those are in critical situations. We also have plans that we design into our programs where if the situation is critical, we will pay those deductibles through a critical illness plan built into the process. So we look at each individual, and if both of you were the same age, if you were twins, your plans could be completely different from each other because we do analyze each person's needs. And again, the biggest thing is trying to make sure that we keep as much of your assets in line so you don't have a bankruptcy situation, because one of the biggest causes of bankruptcy in America right now is not just not having insurance, is not having the proper insurance, and people have gone bankrupt even though they've had insurance because they didn't have the proper person advising them.
Now, is there some risk of being denied coverage, or is there some safety net for people with pre-existing conditions and all that associated with all this stuff we're talking about, or some people just flat out not going to be able to get coverage because they're not healthy?
Stone, pre-existing conditions were one of the backbones in this plan. Other than taking care of the youth that we talked about under age 26, pre-existing conditions right now are a primary exclusion for people for individual insurance. As a matter of fact, you hear about your friends, your associates say, I got to get another job with another company because I have a disease or a situation that's pre-existing.
Right, so they stay in a job that maybe they don't like or just for the insurance.
And quite frankly, the employer has a liability that they're not necessarily pleased with either. That all goes away January 1 of 2014 because pre-existing conditions go away. Quite frankly, the only true criteria for underwriting is going to be age, regionality, in other words, where you live, and in some states, not all, tobacco use. And those are really the prime – gender is going out the way. And
obesity, too?
Obesity also.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's putting a lot of –
So just smokers.
Strain, yes. Smokers are still in this. Putting a lot of strain on the system to say, how do we cover all of these people effectively? Right. But again, if we look at the better understanding of what is healthcare really supposed to do for you and for your family and for your assets, and as to protect them at the levels that they could be, you know, very extensive or very painful financially.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more about your advisor talents, where would they go?
The best thing about what we do as an advisor is it's a direct contact, so you're not going to get inundated with – I'm going to give you my website, which is tprince, T-P-R-I-N-C-E, at ipafamily.com, and that is a direct to me, so you will not get a ton of quotes coming back at you. You know, I will answer your questions, and it is free to answer any questions for individuals. Also, my phone number is 678-644-6683. And again, that's a direct line. And if you want more information about the company, my website is ipa-family.com. And this is a little long, but it's worth it. /advisor/AnthonyPrince. My given name.
I feel healthier already. How about you?
I think that Tony's a great resource.
I do, too. I really appreciate you coming down and visiting with us, man. This has been fun.
It's my pleasure, Stone. Thank you, Lee. Appreciate the time with you guys.
Hey, stay with us while we visit with our next guest.
Oh, definitely. I want to stay compliant.
Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Ellen Dracos with Dracos Lemming. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thank you.
So tell us, you're a consulting firm.
I am.
And what kind of consulting are you providing it, and who are you doing it for?
We are Dracos Lemming Consulting is a 7-year-old marketing consulting firm, and we specialize on growth and strategy and branding. And we work primarily with mid-market companies in a variety of industries, so manufacturing, textiles, financial advising, education, nonprofit. So we're very, very broad, and I have 28 years of experience in doing it. So
how have you seen marketing change over the last since the advent of the internet and social media?
That's a great question. The five things that have really changed in marketing over the quarter of a century that I've been doing it. Quarter of a century.
I'm not
buying it.
She started when she was six.
Thank you. Obviously technology, and not just the internet, but communication technology as well as big data. So those have been really big changes. The other things are the demographics of the United States have changed tremendously in the last quarter century. And globalization, obviously the internet makes every website international as opposed to, you know, being able to control your message. And then saturation, what I call the self-inflicted wound. Marketers have absolutely, you know, the back door of the restroom at the concert venue. I mean, we really have done this to ourselves. Yankelovich says there's a statistic out there right now that Americans are exposed to somewhere between 4,000 and 6,000 marketing messages a day. So breakthrough is obviously a huge challenge for marketers. And then lastly, the control of the brand has left the building. When I started, you know, 4 out of 5 dentists recommend Colgate, and everyone said, oh, great, 4 out of 5 dentists. Now it's, well, who's the 5th dentist, and why didn't they endorse it? And, you know,
maybe he's got some better.
Right, yeah. And, you know, let me go on Facebook and talk about the 5th dentist and, you know, all that sort of thing. So when I meet someone and they say, oh, I'm a brand manager, I'm like, yeah, good luck, because really – all your consumers are your brand managers now. So that's the biggest change, I think.
Now, when you're working with a client, how do you kind of walk them off the ledge? Because, they like to control everything. You know, they want to control their brand. They want to control their message. And they're hiring a marketing person to kind of help them do that. And you got to kind of break it to them that, you know, like you said a second ago, the customer's got a lot of the power nowadays. Your message can go out there, but somebody that has, you know, a huge following on Facebook can start ripping your brand, and you can't ignore that anymore.
No. The first thing we do with a client, the first thing we ask for is their strategic plan. And I think that's what makes us a little bit different than creative marketing agencies. We're business people who happen to specialize in marketing as opposed to creative people who are going to dabble in your business. So we ask for the strategic plan, and we say, you know, where are you having problems, and how can marketing help? And then usually marketing has become less telling and more influencing. Mm-hmm. So with social media, if you do get a negative kind of message on Facebook or Twitter, you know, there are the roadside is littered with brands who have done this wrong. Applebee's being one of them. They had a they posted someone's check and tip on online. A waitress did. And
right.
Then,
you know, advice against this. Yeah,
no, but right. Applebee's didn't. It was just one of their employees did. And guess what?
Ouch.
The public perceives the it as Applebee's
right.
did
damage.
It.
So your employees are your brand ambassadors, for sure. So you certainly need to
that's
make sure.
That's a good
sure.
place to start, right?
We always recommend starting
listen up,
there.
Kevin. Right. Pay attention.
if they're not creating the right message or disseminating the right message, then, you know, you've got a bigger problem. So you want to start on the inside for sure. And then what you really need to do is you need to find those what we call influencers. So people who are brand enthusiasts that will help convey your positive messages. And branding is really – it's changed a lot. But branding is really how do people – what emotion comes to mind when they think of your brand? So if I said Starbucks, you know, some people hate it. Some people love it. If I say Nike, some people think, you know, great performance athletic wear, and some people think slave labor in China, right? So, you know, you really have to try and keep as positive as possible, keep cultivating that emotion around your brand.
Now, how do you help your clients build the relationships with these influencers?
Well, first, a lot of research. Okay, so usually you start with qualitative research. You do focus groups or you monitor social media and that sort of thing. And you really ask, it's a listening. Marketing's become a listening exercise as mm-hmm. opposed to a speaking exercise. And you listen and then you ask the right questions, which we have lots of those questions, and that's what we do. And then you usually go to quantitative research. So then you're talking to more and more people. And then you find a thread of, you know, who's saying what and what's authentic about who we are, and then cultivate those relationships.
It's kind of one at a time, right? It's gone, I guess, over the years. At one point, there were only a handful of media outlets, right? So you
yes.
can kind of blast your message out there and it would be heard.
Absolutely.
But now, like you said, there's, what did you say, 4,000 brands or messages that
yeah.
you're seeing. And it's being disseminated through literally an infinite number of media outlets. I mean, every blog, you can argue that that's mm-hmm. a media outlet nowadays, right?
That's
or
correct.
Facebook page is a media outlet. And so the fragmentation is such that you can't, it's unless you have a deep pockets, talk to everybody in that mass way that you used to. So now you got to do it kind of one conversation at a time.
Well, and we recommend focusing and prioritizing. Mm-hmm. So you asked about social media a little bit earlier. There's what I call the big seven. There's Google, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
Right.
And then Snapchat if you've got teenagers. And so who knows? I'm not sure Facebook is going to be here in 10
right.
years.
It'll
look different.
Talk to the MySpace people. They right. thought they'd be here.
Well, and here's the problem. The future of social media is visual, which is good for Facebook, but it has to be monetized visually. So I still am struggling with Facebook's business model because they didn't start out like Google selling ads, right? They didn't start out charging
right.
a subscription, et cetera, et cetera. So it'll be Facebook will be around 10 years from now. I'm just not sure what it will look like, and it won't look like it looks like what it is today, for sure.
Now, can you go to school still to effectively pursue a career in this arena of marketing, or now are you just better served by getting a street degree and getting up under the wing of somebody like you?
You can definitely go to school for this. What we're finding now is a lot of universities are having career tracks or business tracks around social and digital media and marketing, because that's become such a big part of the marketing
mix. Well, you can't
mix.
Ignore it anymore.
You cannot ignore it. You cannot ignore it. So,
and you can't throw your 20-year-old intern on there because they're the youngest person. They know how to use Facebook or Pinterest.
We find a lot of clients do that, right?
Right?
They think,
you know,
that
my niece is on Facebook all the time, so
right?
she's now in charge of social media for the firm.
Absolutely. We find that more than you would suspect. That is absolutely true. But again, and then there are great trade associations who, you know, for me, I had to go back to school. I mean, I had to, the American Marketing Association had a boot camp for social media for B2B marketers. And let me tell you, it was intense and it was 2 days and it was fantastic and I learned a lot. So that's the fun part of marketing for the last 25 years is, you know, you have to keep current.
Right, because it's going to change. Today's, you know, leading social media outlet is going to be tomorrow's
MySpace.
Pinterest
wasn't around 3 years ago.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, the iPad wasn't around 5 years ago. So you think about it, either you stay current or, you know, you get run over. So
now how is mobile affecting your clients?
Well, when I consult with clients, I tell them, don't worry so much about your website. Definitely go mobile. It's all mobile. If you look at the statistics, there's 8 billion people on the earth, and there are 1 billion smartphones on the earth. So, and again, penetration varies by how developed a country is and all that sort of thing. But, you know, some young people don't have email anymore. They just have cell phone numbers and they text. So mobile is a science in and of itself, and it is not going to go away.
But it's a different strategy because that screen is so much smaller.
Got to prioritize.
You can't kind of monetize it in the way that you could, you know, a magazine ad.
Right.
It's not going to.
It's more measurable, though. That's the beauty of technology now. Is everything, you know, when I started. Launching a product was like shooting fish in a barrel. I mean, we had 3 networks. Mm-hmm. We had 4 national publications. You know, it was easy. That's why we had 2 martini lunches because, I mean,
it was easy.
It was a lot easier than it is
now. You can be half drunk and still get it done, right?
You only worked a half a day. So,
so how does the marketing veteran, the marketing consultant go to market? How do you break through the clutter? Because surely there's other people out
She's
like
got
you.
Mobile.
Absolutely.
Mobile.
Absolutely. Well, this helps, obviously. Sure. So getting in front of audiences. So I do a lot of speaking engagements and, you know, that sort of thing. Our business is all driven by relationships.
Yeah.
So it's networking. It's, you know, coffees, lunches,
Still
dinners.
Still need to do some martinis event. From time to time.
Yes, 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 you do. Usually, yeah, that helps get the contract signed for sure. But
is that the same thing that you would recommend your clients is you got to integrate yourself into the industries and the trade associations and the, like you said, the marketing AMA was important to you. Is that an important component now of a marketing mix that you got to kind of get in there?
Absolutely. And you have to know who your customer is. Mm-hmm. So you have to, and that's where we find a lot of small to medium-sized businesses take a shotgun approach.
Right.
And that's very inefficient, very financially inefficient. So really understanding not just demographically who your target audience is, but also psychographically, behaviorally, how are they consuming social media? We get a lot of clients and they're like, you know, we need to be on Facebook and well, wait a minute. Who is your audience and are they on Facebook around your topic?
Right. Just because Pinterest is a hot social media outlet doesn't mean that it's appropriate for your business.
Absolutely.
Right? If none of your clients are on it, then probably you can pass on that one.
The first question we ask is who is your customer? You know, what's your business strategy? Then who is your customer? And then how are they consuming media around your category?
Right.
How are they looking into the world when they, you know, when I want to know, I get a lot of e-newsletters in the morning about marketing. So that's what keeps me current on social media and those sorts of things. I don't go read bloggers. I don't have time, right? So for me, those e-newsletters are really effective marketing tools for me inbound, right? So it depends on your customer.
Outbound, it might be wise for you, like if your clients are all in manufacturing, maybe you join the manufacturing association.
Absolutely.
And then
Absolutely.
You stand out and like goes, a sore thumb because you're not in manufacturing, but you're marketing. But you
my
can
customers
really,
are.
But your customers
That's
are.
Where my customers are. And then, you know, go and hopefully make a very compelling speech. And then,
but share this information because they're probably hungry for it.
Absolutely.
And you stand out because there's not a lot of marketers in the manufacturing association.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And a lot of our customers are really good at their core competency.
Right.
So they're really good at manufacturing or they're really good at financial services and they want to take that leap to the next level. So marketing is all, for me, is all about growth.
Right.
How do I get to the next level? And that's where Draco Slemming comes in. That's how we help.
Right. But like if your client's a manufacturer of convenience stores, maybe they join the convenience store
Absolutely.
Association, and
Absolutely.
Then they stand out being a manufacturer
Absolutely.
In that world.
Yep. Absolutely. You should be a marketer.
I should be a marketer, right?
So are you on a particularly fun project right now or recently that you're allowed to talk about, that you're really enjoying, doing something unique?
Allowed to talk about, huh? Well, we have a really cool client that manufactures inherently flame-resistant fabric for the military, the fire service, and for industrial workers. And it doesn't sound sexy, but it's actually a really cool product. And so they every deployed troop, U.S. troop, is wearing their fabric, which that's shrinking. So obviously that they're, you know, trying to replace that business internationally. And then, you know, all that outer gear that you see firemen in that protects their skin is made – they're one of the competitors in that industry. But, you know, I know more now about, you know, fire's outer gear than I thought I ever would. So – and that's a very cool client. And they're based in Union City, Georgia. So we're really –
Down the street. And you got to sleep really well at night knowing that you're serving an organization like that. That's got to feel good.
And these are America's heroes, right? These are first responders.
First responders.
So they're really – that's a fun assignment that we've had for 4 years. I mean, so it's been great.
That's great. Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, you have a website?
I do. Actually, our new website just went up yesterday in anticipation of this opportunity.
Oh, there you go.
And it's www.dracoslemming.com. That's D-R-A-C-O-S as in Sam, L-E-M-M-I-N-G.com. Or I can be reached at 404-307-4665 or ellen@dracoslemming.com.
Outstanding. Very energetic and informative conversation. Thanks so much for coming down.
You're welcome. Thank you for this opportunity. I appreciate it.
Well, we have an opportunity to visit with one more guest. You going to hang with us?
Absolutely. I'm here.
All right. And however, in the spirit of compliance, which has been a theme today, I think we have to provide some sort of disclosure before we visit with this gentleman. Is that right, Kevin?
That is correct.
All right. It's your turn, man. Go for it.
Discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or advice for investment, legal, or tax matters. Always consult with your qualified investment, legal, or tax professional before making important financial decisions. Securities and advisory services offered through Harbor Financial Services, LLC, members FINRA, SIPC. Financial planning offered through Legacy Wealth Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor, Harbor Financial Services, LLC, Freedom Financial Services, and Legacy Wealth Advisors are not affiliated.
All right. With that put to bed, let's visit with this gentleman from Legacy Wealth Advisors, Mr. Leroy Tanker. How you doing, man?
Fine. How are you?
I am doing well. You've been very patient. It looked like you might have been taking some notes. I thought I saw a nod or two through the other segments. Did you learn anything in these other conversations?
Well, I did. I learned a lot about compliance, and you can't get away from that, as you can see.
That's a fact.
So you're here to talk about 401k compliance, right?
Sure. We basically help to design retirement plans for small to mid-sized companies and to help them stay compliant and to maintain those plans.
So I got some specific questions to ask about 401 for a lot of reasons, not the least of which my wife has a real job, and she's been at it a while, makes pretty good living, and she's built up a pretty good 401k. And now I can go online and I can look at it and see what it's invested in, how it's growing and all that. It's kind of scaring the heck out of me because just a little change in it, you know, has a big effect on the amount. But my question is around this. I can't go in there on any given day, I don't think, or we can't, and just change what it's invested in and change how we contribute to it, right? Aren't there some rules about only every so often during the year, or how does that piece work?
It really depends upon the plan. Some plans you can go in there daily and make changes. Others you have to wait for a month. It depends on the plan and the investment.
So what are the compliance issues? What are some of the rules that are surrounding this that everybody has to follow?
First of all, we help business owners to understand that they are fiduciaries of their plan, which basically means that there's a standard of care that they must follow in administering the plan and maintaining the plan and collecting funds from employees and remitting those funds. So there are compliance issues under ERISA, which is the Employee Retirement Income Security Act of 1974. And the Department of Labor actually enforces these rules. So there are a number of compliance issues that small to mid-sized companies must face.
So now, in your work, are you helping companies with their 401k plan, or are you helping individuals maximize their retirement?
We actually do both. We do both. We help individuals and we help companies.
Mm-hmm.
And today we're talking about our assistance to companies.
Right. So what size companies typically use your services?
I would say one employee on up to a couple hundred employees.
Oh, really? So once they get beyond a couple hundred, then they have some internal system typically?
Yeah, they're usually a different type of plan and a different size. But our sweet spot, so to speak, is at 1 to 200 employees. So
but a really small company can set up a 401k? Because, again, my frame of reference is, you know, Holly works for a really big firm. But you can have a 401k set up for just a handful of employees?
You sure can. You can have it set up for one employee. There are solo 401k plans now.
And then so how do you even find these companies? Like you just contact companies? Is that your job? Is you just call companies, go, hey, do you want a 401k?
Through relationships, through referrals, through past relationships also.
And then the reason they're setting this up is to just provide more value and benefits to their employees? Are they typically going from no plan to a plan that you're helping them with? Or are they moving from one plan to a different plan that you're offering?
Actually, it's all over the board. We're seeing a lot of people coming out of corporate and establishing their own company.
Oh, so they're like solopreneurs?
Exactly.
And they want to have similar benefits that they had when they were at their previous company?
Exactly. And we're also seeing, of course, larger companies, you know, evaluate their plan, which they should do on an annual basis anyway.
Is there some things they should look for when they're evaluating a plan?
There are a number of things they should look for. Of course, you know, we have a checklist, and there is an annual checklist, but first of all, there are a number of compliant issues with plans. One of the most common compliant issues that we see in small businesses is timely remittance of deposits. You know, you're collecting money from an employee's check, and you have that money in trust. And, you know, we see small to mid-sized companies, sometimes larger companies, you get into a cash flow crunch and
and you're like, well, I got this pile of money here, yeah. So
put up a couple new studios, right? Yeah, yeah. We'll pay it back.
Does that happen? Yeah,
you see a lot of it, and generally a company has 15 days to remit those funds.
So they play with that little window of time.
Well, some go beyond that, and now the Department of Labor has a position that because you can do electronic funds transfer, you really ought to remit those within a day or two of the time you collect them.
Right. Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Right.
And then let the bank play with the 15 days, and that's where they make their million. So I have a few rules of my own. If I can't spell it, I don't like it. Fiduciary, this idea of being a fiduciary, having fiduciary responsibility, is there a way to limit that, or how do you go about limiting that so that you don't have that kind of exposure when all you're really doing is trying to help out your employees?
There is a way to limit it. First of all, you can there's a section in ERISA 404C that allows you to do certain things to limit that, make certain investments, to make certain disclosures to your employees, and it limits some of your responsibility there. You can also hire plan consultants like myself to help you administer the plan so that you can kind of put it off on us. You can buy some fiduciary insurance also.
So what are some questions? I'm always interested in how to go about hiring the best professional provider for an individual situation. If I'm interviewing a financial advisor, what are two or three questions I should always be asking and trying to get to the bottom of and making a decision about who to go with?
Well, find out if that advisor is a registered investment advisor under, you know, either under the SEC or under the state of Georgia. Ask for their ADV, which is a disclosure statement that tells you everything about that advisor. And just look at the experience of that advisor. They have to disclose conflicts of interest in that statement. And are they going to actually act as a fiduciary of your plan, or are they just going to be a broker of your plan, which is very important?
So if you're a fiduciary of my plan, then you're kind of on the hook for some of the responsibility, right?
You're taking on the responsibility.
So then yes, I don't have to worry about it?
Well, you're still
worried about it less.
You're still worrying about it, right? You're still responsible, but you've shifted some of that. But there are provisions under Section 338, which allows you to shift the entire responsibility to someone else.
And you do that as well?
We do that also.
Well, my hat's off to you, because not only do you have to know a lot about money, and God help you on that front, but you must be a master salesperson, because I'm trying to envision walking into an office and trying to explain to a person why they ought to let me manage their money. I mean, that can't be an easy task.
Well, you're right, and we're seeing more exposure, though. Not only, you know, the DOL came out with some fee disclosure rules, and they're auditing more plans, and it's really kind of heightening the sense of awareness there.
Right. Well, people, there's a lot of pain points, I would imagine, that it's a lot easier to kind of say, hey, I'm going to have you watch my back here than me try to figure all this out, because there's a lot of complexity.
Correct.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more, you have a website?
Yes, the website is MyFreedomFS, F as in Frank, S as in Sam.com.
Now, what's the sweet spot of company? Do you work for, Ellen was working with manufacturers. Do you have a sweet spot of an industry you work for or any business?
Any business.
That's between 1 and 200 employees that
correct.
you have a product or service that can help them?
Correct, yeah.
All right.
The email address, if I can give it, is...
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Leroy Tanker, LeroyTanker, CPACFP.
You got a lot of initials.
You certainly do, man. This is a certified guy. Yeah.
At att.net or by telephone 770-817-8988.
All right. And again, the website is myfreedomfs.com. And if you're thinking about a 401k, definitely give Leroy a call. Thank you all of the guests here today, for being with us. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next week on Atlanta Business Radio.